Welcome to special coverage of Bleach from our Patreon archives. If you would like to be up to date with episodes that we are recording right now for our Bleach coverage, you can become a patron. So enjoy the episode, and if you want more, go to our Patreon to check it out. Hi, I'm Spencer.
And I'm Blake.
And you're about to get jumped.
Welcome, patrons, to our second Patreon-only episode of Blake and Spencer Get Jumped, a weekly podcast where we watch the anime, so you don't have to.
But you should still totally watch the anime.
This week on Get Jumped, we're watching Bleach episodes 2 through 5, where a hair clip can save your life, talking birds just miss their moms, and a high school student is basically unfazed by having a steel beam fall on his head.
Look, I'm just throwing it out there that most of the characters inside of the anime universe are going to be teenagers, number one. And number two, if you are inside of a cartoon universe, you need to do one of two things. Be completely unfazed, or be basically a red shirt and be killed by, you know, nothing inside of the street. And also, you gotta beware, guys, if you are somebody that's slightly in the background of a character that's wearing really cool clothes, because you're gonna get it. I've gotta be honest with you, you're gonna die. And it's something that you're gonna have to deal with, while he over there is not gonna be fazed by anything.
You should always be the one wearing cool clothes, or you'll be killed.
So, moral of the story, put on cooler clothes. Let's jump in.
Hey, Spencer.
Hey. Hey, Blake.
I want my board.
Okay. I know.
I'm going to make that joke multiple times.
Okay. So, hey, everybody. We are back again this month with another Patreon-only episode of Bleach. It's really, really exciting. And as promised from last month, we have the answer to our patron quiz of why is Bleach called Bleach. There's a couple of answers for that. The first one is that they're going to clarify your soul and bleach it clean. And the other one is that Tai Kubo was a really big fan of Nirvana. And their first album was called Bleach. So that's a thing.
The interview with him that I read was that he said he was looking for something that had to do with the black cloaks that the characters were wearing in his series. And he thought that inverting that into the color white was interesting. And then he was like, bleach is a word that is kind of associated with the color white. Has a good ring to it, and so that's where he came up with the idea.
Yeah, there's apparently conflicting stuff, because I know that from you saying it to me, and I also know that the other one that he has talked about has happened in different interviews as well, where he talked about like bleach doesn't cleanse your soul. Don't drink bleach.
It gets rid of the Rona. Dear leader said so.
Oh, anyways. But I sort of think, like what we talked about inside of our Kill la Kill episode, it's really exciting to think about like these creators just being like, well, I'm a fan of this name of this band's first album. I'm going to call my entire series it.
Yeah. And I could see what, on the one hand, creators are people too. So it's possible that they misremember. It's also possible that they've recontextualized or built up a narrative over time on something that they've thought about or been asked about a lot. So it's possible that his answers have changed over time as he's thought about it, and the thinking that he's done about it has been sort of retroactively applied to his memories of when he came up with it initially. It's also possible that they are both true and he just didn't mention them in conjunction with each other. Maybe he was looking for something that had to do with the color white, and he happened to be a big fan of Nirvana's album and was like, well, there you go. So, you know, it could be a lot of things. But either way, it's pretty interesting. It's also, I gotta say, it's in a really weird way, it's an intriguing title. Because if you don't know what Bleach is, and you hear somebody be like, it's an anime action series called Bleach, you're like, what the hell could that possibly be about? Tell me more.
Yeah. So I also wanted to do a quick shout out to our two new patrons who have jumped on the boat since our last episode for the month. That's going to be Dylan and David. Welcome. We are super happy to have you. And also, if any of our patrons are interested, tell your friends to check out the Patreon to become a part of it. Because if they do, they can also get cool episodes about Bleach.
And if you have friends that aren't patrons, they will not be able to talk to you about these Bleach episodes if you don't listen to it with them. And you're not allowed to be around them right now because of the Rona. So they to become patrons. It's a rock and a hard place.
So I found a really cool article because I've been doing like a breakdown of finding out different things about Bleach.
He's been breaking down left and right, you guys.
I've got two flat tires. So the first thing that I wanted to go over with it is that the art style, I've been finding some conflicting stuff about it, about like what his initial art style comes from. But I did find a really cool breakdown that goes over some of the 10 most influential either manga or anime that influenced some of the style inside of Bleach, and I wanted to go over some of them. The first one that I found, which I thought was super interesting, was Yu Hakusho. We are covering that. I am super excited that is something that was very influential in it. And you can really see it inside of Bleach.
Yeah, they were actually strikingly similar in their core concepts at the start of both of the series.
Yeah. It's a lot based on the narrative structure and the character structure of both Ichigo and Yusuke. That is going to be the biggest connector between the two. The next one I had never heard of before, but it is a very well-regarded and legendary manga, which is going to be, I think it's pronounced Gigigi no Kitaru. And it is a very, very interestingly drawn manga. And it's so, it's so cool seeing the character design from Bleach starting to morph off of something like that. And it's left me wanting to read it now, because the synopsis that I've seen of it is just, it sounds very strange.
Can you give me an elevator pitch?
Okay. It deals heavily with the supernatural, mainly the peace between both the human world and the outside spiritual world. And so it kind of reminded me of these, it must have been closer to something like a Mushishi. I am very interested in. However, I will say I haven't watched or read any of it yet. I've just kind of seen the quick synopsis of it from this article, but I'm very interested and I will report back next month because I'm definitely checking it out. The next one, which I thought was really interesting and I also really loved the show, was Saint Seiya or Saint Seiya. It's a incredibly famous shonen manga. It came out in the mid 80s. It's about these, I like in the article, they call them youths.
what is a youth?
They wear, different armors that are based off of different signs in, the zodiac. And they fight against, like literal gods inside of this universe. And the weapon structure in Bleach is directly influenced by Saint Seiya. And I had watched this series when I was a kid on VHS with my friend Alex in Alabama. We watched this and also Ronin Warriors. And if you've never experienced Ronin Warriors, you're in for a treat. And also, you should absolutely watch Ronin Warriors because it is ridiculous.
I haven't seen either of those. I am not familiar with Ronin Warriors almost at all, other than the title. But Saint Seiya, it was on Toonami a little bit when I was younger, during the time period when I was in middle school, and my grandmother would come and pick me up from school sometimes, and I would stay at her house until my parents were done with work. And she had cable when we didn't, so I would get to watch Toonami if we got home early enough. And I caught like a little bit of one episode of Saint Seiya, and I was like, I want to watch all of it, and that's all I've ever seen of it.
Yeah. So the next one is actually going to be a previous work that was done by Kubo, and that is going to be Zombie Powder. This is going to be one of his earliest works, and
I think it's his first like major published work.
Yeah, I think it's I'm not 100% sure. I haven't done enough research on it. But one of the things that it talks about is that there's a lot of hallmarks from his design of Zombie Powder that you can see directly into Bleach.
Yeah, like, it's kind of like Akira Toriyama. Like, you know he's drawing something when you see it. Like, it's not ambiguous. It's the same thing. You look at Zombie Powder and you're like, oh, is that a new character from Bleach? And then you're like, no, that's a series from before Bleach.
Well, speaking of that, the next one is very influential, is Dragon Ball. It was, it's inspired a large majority of current manga that exists today. And it was also, really influential for Kubo as well. He took special influence apparently from the villains that Toriyama designed. They influenced a lot of the villains that he decided to use inside of his universe. And one of them that was, that I thought was really interesting was, some of the Hollow designs, are played with off of some of the Red Ribbon Army. And I thought that was really interesting. The next one is going to be one that I had never heard of before, but I'm also super interested in it because it looks ridiculous, which is called Bad Shield Unit. Mostly because I was like, what? What does that mean?
Well, there's a unit of characters and they're supposed to use their shields to defend people, but their shields are bad.
Okay. So,
am I right?
This apparently is one of Kubo's earliest one-shots. It's a story about Ricky and Millie, who observe the terrorist group as the Great Southern Snake. And it is very different, apparently, from the rest of his work. But it is really interesting to see, though, that a lot of the character designs and clothing designs are ones that have carried over, but it is very different design of like the facial structure they talk about. One of the things that he decided to do after working on this was completely start to change the way that he did facial designs of his characters. And I think that's really interesting. The next one is going to be Battle Angel Alita, a movie that I hated. But apparently the manga is great.
I must have misunderstood or misremembered. I thought you didn't like it and were frustrated by it, but hated, I did not remember.
It's not grown on me. I rewatched it again and it upset me more.
Okay, I should rewatch it. I only saw it the one time in theaters, but I'd like to rewatch it.
Yeah. There was a lot of the styling that you see in Zombie Powder and then later on in Bleach has a lot of the styling that is in Alita. And so you can see some of that breakdown. The next one is called Rune Master Urara, and that's another one-shot that Kubo created. And this one is, it's really interesting, mostly because, the style is completely different from what Kubo did afterwards. And he is quoted as saying that he finished it and realized that he didn't agree with most of the things that he had just done inside of that manga. And that influenced his next work, and that influenced him moving and basically breaking away from the style that he was doing before to get his own style, and that's where you're going to see like stuff like Zombie Powder and Bleach, where he found his own, you know, his own artistic voice, as it was, which I think is really interesting. The next one that I found a little bit frustrating because I've never liked this series is Berserk. And the biggest reason I don't like Berserk is one of those that Blake has talked about a lot, which is there is so much hype about it that it could never have lived up to the way it was represented to me. Yeah. And that is the other reason that I hated the way that people kept on putting Vampire Hunter D up onto a pedestal when I was watching it when I was younger, because I heard so much stuff about this being like the most brutal anime you'll ever watch. It's the most ridiculous, crazy anime, and it has like all this different styling, and you're gonna get your mind blown by it. And I was like, okay, and I sort of put it off a little bit. And in the meantime, I watched stuff like Trigun and Neo Genesis Evangelion. And so then when I went to Berserk, I was like, this isn't that crazy brutal. I just watched this person rip off the head of an angel. Like, it's not that bad.
Yeah, Berserk, though, has content warning because there's a lot of adult shit going on in Berserk.
Oh, yeah. It is brutal and crazy and also, like, really sexually charged.
Yeah, it's very much like manga's Game of Thrones. So if you can make it through like the bad sexual politics and rape scenes and stuff of Game of Thrones, then you might like Berserk because it's got that same kind of like sword and sorcery thing, but much more magical in an anime way. I actually recently finished reading the second like giant volume, which I think was three volumes in one. So I think I've read six volumes worth of Berserk manga, and it's good, I guess. It's not really my cup of tea, and I really thought it would be. There's parts of it that I like, but the parts of it that I don't care as much about are the majority of it.
And then the last one, which is going to be the most interesting one on the list. And the big reason why is because I've mentioned two of the other one-shots that that Kubo had done before, right? These kind of breakaways from what he ended up circling back to. And then the reason why I say circling back is because the last one is called Ultra Unholy Hearted Machine. And it is the last work that inspired Kubo is his first ever work that he did. It's a crime fiction. It's a story about a guy who has a supernatural ability to delete buildings and people. And one of the reasons I think this is so interesting because of it is that his style inside of this manga is very close to the style that is going to be what Bleach is known for. It's not there at all. In some of those later works, but it's really interesting that you see the beginnings of what he was doing, and then he leaned into this rounder style of characters' faces, and then instead of doing that with those two other pieces that he did in between, he went back to one and then went the opposite styling, leaning into it and going into that angular style that he is known for Zombie Powder and Bleach. Hmm. And I just think that there's that it's I don't know. It's so weird to see the journey of a creator and how they like built out their series of work and came back to the beginning, took that drawing board, and then just kind of turned it on its head one more time. And I think that's a really interesting thing about his journey as an artist. And because I found this article and I was so interested in that, I think I'm going to do like a deep dive of like why he was influenced to change the way that he did. And I'm sort of feeling that it's one of those things where it's just like either either the world outside that he was working for was influencing on him, like he felt like he needed to lean into a different art style, or if it's something where it's just like, you know, maybe he was working for a company and they were telling him that he needed to change up his art style, like a, you know, I guess it would be like an editor, like a newspaper or something like that.
Yeah, but it kind of makes me think of like the Marvel house style or the DC house style, which is a term for like, this is what most of our comics look like. And so you'll see, especially, I would say, well, I was going to say, especially in earlier comics, but I'm not sure if that's any less true, if not any more true in modern era. But I know like in the early days, like the very first early days of Marvel, like they were trying to get everything to look as close to like Jack Kirby's art as possible. And sort of that specific type of more or less realistic illustrated characters became what was called the Marvel house style. And then you'll see as you start getting into the 70s, you get more like artisty artists that are coming on. Like Bill Sienkiewicz really jumps out at me. Like he starts working in the 70s, and then he, you know, he's known for like his work on the New Mutants being like very artistic and very like out there for comic book superhero artwork. But like when he started, he was working in house style, which was him just trying to like copy that style instead of do his own thing. And it's my colloquial understanding that like shonen artists don't have a house style in the same way. Obviously, one, because they're making their own work from the beginning to the end, so they're not trying to like carry on from some other creator. But two, the editor and creator relationship for manga seems to be pretty different than the relationship between like companies like Marvel and their editorial teams and the writers and artists that are making those comics. But I know that like, you know, I think we talked some time ago on the show about like the editorial things that had an influence on Akira Toriyama while he was creating Bleach or while he was creating Dragon Ball Z that like heavily influenced the creation of Cell. Like, you know, his original intent was that it was going to be the Android Saga. And the first two androids that you saw, the old guy and the like big dude, were going to be the main villains. And then editorial didn't think they were scary enough. So then he made the younger two androids, and then they didn't think they were scary enough. So then he made Cell, and then Cell wasn't quite right, so then he like made him change forms, and like this was all editorially mandated. Sasuke's entire existence was an editorial suggestion. I don't know if it was a mandate, but it was definitely something that did not come from the creator. And I know Bleach also has a history of being affected by the editorial, but I don't think it works quite the same way. So I would be curious to find out like where his sort of artistic journey falls on that spectrum.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to do more research. So tune in next month, about that. But with that being said, we are going to jump into our episodes of Bleach for this month.
Yes.
So can you remind us what is happening in Bleach?
So far, we've just had the first episode, which sets up what's going on in this world. We're set in pretty much modern Japan. There's a kid named Ichigo, who is our protagonist. He has the ability to see spirits. He starts seeing big-ass monsters running around with big white masks on their face. And a woman in like ancient-style garb, black robe, fighting them with a sword. It comes quickly to find out that her name is Rukia. She is what's called a Soul Reaper in the American version, or a Shinigami in the Japanese version. She explains that the big monsters with masks on are called Hollows. They are essentially evil monstrous spirits that want to devour human souls. And Soul Reapers are there to help human souls pass on into the afterlife and to stop the Hollows from attacking people. Ichigo is about to get attacked because the Hollow shows up at his family home. Rukia helps to protect him, but notices that Ichigo has an atypically large spiritual energy, and that is probably why he was being attacked by those Hollows in the first place. He also is tenaciously trying to assist in the fight because his family's lives are in danger. And by doing so, he puts himself in the line of fire, and Rukia has to take a really bad blow in order to stop him from being fatally wounded. She is almost fatally wounded and says that the only hope that they have is for her to stab him with her sword, which will allow him to take a small portion of her power, transform into a Soul Reaper for like a second, and fight the Hollow for her. And it's a long shot, but maybe it'll work. And instead, he takes almost all of her power, transforms into a Soul Reaper, and makes like immediate quick work of the Hollow. And so that did not go according to plan, and we're going to pick up with that in episode 2.
Yeah, so first and foremost, let's remind you what is happening every single time that Ichigo wakes up in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
It's that he is almost murdered every morning by his father.
Yeah, it's comedy murder, so his dad doesn't mean it. He is attacking him seriously from the standpoint that he is trying to force Ichigo to defend himself, but he is not actually trying to, like, literally hurt Ichigo in any lasting way or cause any permanent damage or death to him. But yeah, it's maybe not the best parenting choice.
Yeah, it's just like every morning he's just like, you know, what is the name of that character that he is talking about in 30 Rock, where he's just like, I've instructed him to attack me when I'd least expect it. It's just like he's trying to do that for his son every single day, so he will, you know, at some point probably ruin his life by attacking his significant other in the middle of the night for no reason.
Yeah, definitely.
This is they're trying to like softly poorly. Yeah, they're like trying to softly caress his face, and he just like breaks their hand.
Never! You're not my dad.
Yeah, let's step away from that one really gingerly. Anyways, he also declares at this point that he doesn't have anything else that he wants to teach his son. And then they have this whole conversation about how, like, nobody remembers what happened last night. And everything is fine, and a car must have drove into the side of their house. But there's nobody left, and nobody remembers anything about that car, so it must be fine.
Yeah, this is weird. Ichigo is suspicious, but he's also late for class, so he goes to school. And yep. We're going to be introduced to a large but not yet complete cast of side characters, most of whom end up being basically expendable. Not expendable in the sense that like they are or could be or should be killed, but expendable in the sense that like they don't, I don't know, like why are they in the story?
Yeah, I do appreciate though that he takes the time to kind of build these characters so that he has, you know, at the very beginning of his manga, he is building out characters in case he wants to use them later on. I don't know if that's the exact reason behind it, but it's really interesting to give you a little bit of like red herrings of characters that might be important later on. Because if yeah. you take a look at like Orihime is obviously important, you know, her hair is orange. But right. also,
although apparently not naturally orange, or maybe nobody's just giving her shit about it.
Anyways, Tatsuki is also important inside of these episodes. She's really attached to Orihime. She's going to be important at some points inside of the story. She's also an interesting character. I always got like a little bit of a vibe about her being in love with Orihime. Was that leaned into inside of the anime as much as the manga?
I don't know. I would say it's hard for me to call that because she's really tomboyish and she has short hair, so she's kind of like soft gay coding. There is also a literal gay character who is literally in love with Orihime and makes a big fuss of it every time she shows up. And right. so it's hard for me to it's hard for me to tell if Totsuki is like intentionally gay coded or if she just happens to have traits that are often sort of like gendered around masculinity. And so when they appear on a female character, they send up like sexuality red flags. It's hard to say that, like, I don't remember specific instances of her acting or doing things in a way that seemed to indicate romantic love for Orihime, but she also has sort of like classic and indeed antiquated gay coding on her that may or may not have been intentional. So I'm not mm-hmm. sure which one it is.
Yeah. The other characters that we're going to meet inside of this classroom where they're just kind of talking about things that are happening, and also it's good that nobody woke up for the car crash that happened in their the side of Ichigo's house, is Keigo and Mizuru. I think that's how it's pronounced.
Mizuru, I think, maybe?
I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, they're not important, and I hate them.
Yeah. We're also going to get Sato, and Sato is very important inside of
the show. Yeah, this is also, there's a lot of stuff in these first, so this is episodes 2 and 3 that cover this one story arc, and then we'll cover another story arc in 4 and 5. And these episodes are like 2 episodes. There's a lot of stuff going on. And if I remember correctly, they're like 2 chapters in the manga. Like, this story has been greatly expanded upon in the anime. And one of those expansions that's less serious is that Chad is introduced here. In the manga, he's not introduced until his story that we're going to get to in episode 4.
Yeah. And he's introduced pretty quickly inside of this. But the thing you really need to take away from what's going on inside of the classroom is that there is a new person inside of their classroom, and that is Rukia. Rukia is like, hey, I'm your new student friend. I'm going to come join you. And then she like holds out her hand to like shake Ichigo's hand, and written inside of her hand is just like, if you say anything, I'll murder you.
Yeah. So he is obviously a little flummoxed by this. They're going to steal away for a private conversation pretty soon. And in that conversation, Rukia is going to be like, you know what? This is your fault because you were only supposed to take a little bit of my power. You took pretty much the whole thing, and I am now not strong enough to return to the Soul Society, so I'm stuck here for a while.
Yeah. The rest of this episode is all about how she's going to show, number one, that Ichigo needs to hone his powers in order to figure out what's going on and to cover her beat, basically, while she is recovering her soul powers.
I totally forgot about this and didn't put any notes down, but you're so right. And this part is so weird to me. So what she's going to say is like, okay, I can't be a soul reaper right now, so you have to be a soul reaper because you have my powers, and that's the job of a soul reaper, so you've got it, so congratulations. And Ichigo turns her down like flatly. He's just like, look, you're talking about this job involves like getting into dangerous situations and fighting deadly monsters to protect people. And I am not going to promise you that I'm going to throw my life in the way for some stranger, which is, mm-hmm. if you have ever watched or read Bleach before, is kind of a strange thing for Ichigo to say, because that is like his whole deal. But to me, I think, one, cynically and outside of the story, I think the author is trying to figure out how these characters work and is sort of circling the bullseye here. And in story, I think Ichigo is maybe trying to put on a tough face, and maybe I'm not sure. It could be a little bit of like him not really being aware of exactly who he is as a person in a specific way. But I think a lot of it is him trying to just be like, look, like what I want to do is to be left alone and not be bothered by other people's business. But like one of his major character traits is getting involved in other people's business for the sake of protecting them. That's like his whole motivation throughout the entire series. So I think maybe he's just kind of like doing some braggadocio.
Yeah. So then the next thing that's going to happen inside of this is Rukia is going to just be like, you know what? Fine. If you don't really want to do this, let me go ahead and show you what might happen. Look, there's a little boy soul over there. And what's behind it? Oh, a horrible hollow that's shaped like a giant spider monster. And it's chasing after this young boy. And he's just like, I don't want to deal with this. And she's like, well, if you don't deal with it, he's going to be devoured. And and Ichigo's like, okay, fine, I'll murder this monster. So he like cuts off its leg, and then when it reappears, he stabbed it through the face.
She stops him, though. She's like, you can't fight it unless you're committed to saving everyone. Like, this kid is a stranger. You just said you weren't going to put your neck out there for strangers, and now you're going to do it. You have to decide that that's who you're going to be, or you should just let this kid die. And she's trying to call him on his bluff and say, like, I don't think you're the kind of person who can stand on the sidelines and let something bad happen in front of you when you have the power to stop it. And she's right. But he responds basically like, fuck you. I'm going to save this kid because I want to. And it doesn't have anything to do with me promising you anything.
Yeah. So he ends up killing this gigantic hollow because he can't stand to watch this kid go through this. And then he performs a konso, on the boy, which is the thing that they do where they take their zanpakuto and like stamp their forehead, so that they fall away into the
you're ready for the post the office
society. Get in the mail. So he ends up, you know, getting that boy to go away. And then, we're going to cut to some super important more stuff about Orihime. And it turns out her brother, who is dead, and he's just kind of floating around her window, just being all dead.
Yep. Yeah, this was such a weird part. This is also anime only, and I'm going to keep bringing that up because I like these episodes, but there's two problems I have with them. And one is that I've seen them 1,000 times, so it's a little hard to get through them. And two, I think that the anime only stuff here is wildly unnecessary and maybe even muddies or detracts from the story at some points. And this is maybe one of them. We're going to find out how hollows are made later on in the series. In this episode, they're going to show us how a hollow is made, and it's not the same way. And what's going to happen is he's hanging out being sad that he's dead or that she's happy or whatever. And then some hollows are going to show up and steal him away to some strange dimension that may or may not have a name later. And they're going to eat him. And then because they ate him, he becomes a hollow. Ruki is basically going to repeat this later on, that this is a thing that can happen, but this is all anime only, and it doesn't make complete sense to me.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that, honestly.
The manga, I don't want to be one of those like manga purists. I don't think that things have to be 100% the same, but like in the manga, he has been dead for a long time, and in that time, he was a restless spirit, and he became a hollow during that time. And this is the time period in which he starts to move, and it is heavily implied that partly that's because Ichigo's powers have awakened. And in this episode, they do this whole subplot about how there is some sort of like puppet master hollow that is after Ichigo specifically and is making hollows to get at him. And that's all anime only. And it's just not needed. It's the Grand Fisher. We're going to meet him next time. That's not his deal. But it is in the show, but only kind of, because they just kind of shoehorned it in. And I think that's the problem, is that the anime adapted this, but they didn't change any of the stuff in the manga. They just added extra information in the anime that wasn't needed, but made the information that was already there that they adapted directly from the manga a little harder to follow.
Yeah, it turns out the other thing that's happening inside of this is that bad shit keeps on happening to Orihime. Yeah,
like she, what is it? They're like, did you just get hit by a car? And she's like, it's fine.
Don't worry about me. I'm fine. And it turns out that she has been touched by a hollow. And what that, I like that you wrote down, it's like touched by an angel, but worse.
It is.
Instead of being saved, be extra careful around streets. There's also this great moment Ichigo is coming back into his house and they're talking about how like a couple of things have gone missing and they're like, I don't know what's happening. And he goes up to his room and he just like he opens his closet door and Ruki is like in there and she's just like, yes. And he's just why the hell are you in here?
I thought it was like she bursts out of the closet and I was like, Ichigo, we have a mission. And he's like, what the fuck? Were you in my closet? And she's been stealing some of his little sister's clothes so she can have PJs. It's great.
Yeah, I really love this. There's gonna be a battle as well between Orihime's brother, who is now a hollow, fighting against Ichigo. There is going to be a good quick little back and forth, and then Ichigo is going to crack the mask of the hollow, revealing that there is a human face behind it, and this is just gonna shatter Ichigo's world. He's gonna be like, what? Hollows aren't just mindless monsters. They were people once.
Yeah, oh, he's going to go full Keanu.
He is full Keanu-ing. He is like straight up so Keanu-ing right now. And he's like almost full on Bill and Ted. Not like Bill and Ted 2, but like definitely Bill and Ted 1.
Yeah, this is... This fight, so I gotta reread the manga chapters so that I can write a blog about it, but I read them earlier this year, maybe like last year, so pretty recently, which is one of the reasons why I know so much about why this is different than the manga. And this fight in Ichigo's bedroom, it's very short, and it is also manga, or it's also anime only. Like, they do not fight in the anime until they're at Orihime's house in a minute. Or in the manga, Jesus Christ. So in the manga, their only confrontation is the final confrontation from the anime. This one was added in, and partly they try to tie it to this like subplot, this anime-only subplot of some sort of like evil hollow puppet master. And I don't love that. But what I do love is, one, the start of the fight has a really good visual where a giant monster hand like bursts through the wall of Ichigo's room. And that looks great. Very good. But also this whole thing about hollows being people too is something that does show up in the manga, but not until later when they're fighting the hollow in the confrontation. Here, it gives Ichigo time to brood over it. And it gives you a different type of tension. Instead of him having to make a snap decision in the sort of final confrontation fight, here he realizes that he is going to have to fight this thing later, and he has to decide what to do. And there's not a lot of screen time devoted to it because it is anime only, but they do a good job of, especially, I would say, like, the way that they direct the voice actor, which is a really good voice actor, Johnny Young Bosch. The tone that he takes and some of the sort of like hmms that he does really does a good job of like putting that internal debate and turmoil that he's having into the gaps where dialogue aren't. And I think it's the change of this art of this, you know, storyline that works really well, whereas the other ones don't work as well as the manga.
Yeah. So the next thing that is going to happen inside of this is, number one, Rukia is going to completely guess everything that is happening inside of this world.
The anime only thing she just pulls right out of her ass, and she's like, that must be what's happening.
Meanwhile, Orihime and Tatsuki, or how do you pronouncing it?
Tatsuki.
God, yeah, how do I pronounce everything so wrong always?
It's like Sasuke, where the U in the middle is basically just for show.
Yeah. Orihime and Tatsuki are hanging out.
Crazy to me is that you mispronounced Tatsuki, like, while you were talking about how much you liked this character in a show that you have talked at length multiple times about how much you like. Like, how do you not know?
Look, I'm going to throw it out there, man. I think it's just the way that you
hear things.
It's, number one, it's not only that. It's that I have watched the anime far less than I have read this manga.
That makes sense.
The biggest problem with me with manga is that I will get, I read, let's jump into why I did so badly on the literature
portion. Like, Spencer, jump into Spencer.
Let's just jump in really quick why I did so badly on the reading and comprehension version part of the ACT. And that is,
you're an idiot.
When I read, I read and I, like, have an internal dialogue of someone speaking at the same speed that I am reading.
Oh, yeah.
So it makes it very difficult for me to read very quickly.
Yeah, because you're watching the movie.
Correct.
In your head. That is, I do that, too. That I'm a slow reader. Read.
Yeah, and it makes it very difficult for me to make it all the way through a timed test where you are expected to read through something once, maybe twice, and then answer questions about it. So my reading and comprehension section of the ACT was not finished by the time that they called time on it, and I was just like, shit, and then I wrote down just random, like, you know, random bubbles so that I could finish it.
And this is why standardized tests aren't good for all people, because you're very smart and you're a more than competent reader, but reading comprehension test under a time limit like that is just not a scenario in which you're going to succeed ever, just because of the way that you are.
It's fucking stressful, man. It's fucking stressful.
Yeah.
Anyways.
We had to move because I want my board.
Yeah. So anyways, Orihime and Tatsuki are hanging out when suddenly they're attacked by a horrible hollow. It's going to basically kill Orihime, and then it's going to start just choking Tatsuki to death. And Ichigo is going to arrive.
Yeah, it literally smacked the soul right out of Orihime's body.
Oh my god. Anyways, so there's a battle that happens. Ichigo is not going to use his full strength because
he's got some, like, good animation.
I feel bad. God, I have to stop Keanu-ing him.
Yeah, you're you are really giving him a thing.
Okay.
I'm thinking you want to get jumped, Ichigo.
So I'm tempted to add that thing that, like, Jay and Miles do on the X-Men, where it's just like, if you want an extra shout out at the end of an episode in the Ichigo voice, let me know. And yeah. I'll just be like, hey, thanks, Dylan, for joining the show.
Yeah, we'll do that shit. If you guys want that, let us know, because we will do that.
Yeah. Anyways.
We'll give these characters voices and thank you in their voices.
Yeah. So anyways, the last thing that is going to happen in this fight, though, is that Ichigo is not going to be able to fully kill this hollow because he feels too bad. And this hollow is going to start to develop its rationality again. That's how I kind of saw it.
Anime,
like, it was fighting off the hollowness.
Huh?
It was like fighting off the hollowness of itself, I guess. Kind of
yeah,
like
in the anime, it is suggested that because he turned into a hollow so recently, he is still, some of his humanity is still there. It hasn't been, like, devoured entirely. In the manga, I think it's just because his connection with Orihime was so strong. And basically, the humanity is going to come through and he's going to be like, Orihime, why did you forget about me when I first died? One, He's gonna give us a little exposition backstory, which is that their parents died or were just inattentive or absentee. And so he basically, like, adopted her, and their relationship was almost more of a parent-child than a sibling relationship. And he loved her more than anything, and then he died unexpectedly. And of course, she said something rude to him the last time she saw him, because literally every character who's ever died in any piece of media ever the person that left them said something rude to them, right? The last time that they saw them and is on the rack about it. So that's like a, you know, I mean, that's just take that as read. That's assumed. But he's like, after I died, you spent a lot of time at the shrine for me, because this is not an atypical thing in Japanese society to like do a little shrine in your house for people in your family that have died. And then you'll like light candles and go pray at the shrine. It's just like kind of a cultural thing that they do over there. And so she would do that a lot. And then eventually she stopped doing it and she started being like super happy with her friends. And he was like, you didn't pray to me anymore and you were really happy. And so I got pissed because you forgot about me. And she is like, no, I realized that me praying over you and being so sad all the time was probably holding you to earth and making it hard for you to pass on. And so I decided that I would go and live my life and show you how happy I was so that you wouldn't have any regrets about leaving me behind and you could move on. And so like they were just ships in the night, totally at odds with each other as far as what they were doing and what they were intending. And I like that a lot. This is really nice.
Yeah. The last thing that he is going to do in this world, though, is he is going to take the Zanpakuto. Ichigo lets him do this, and he stabs himself before he can hurt anybody else, which purifies him, and he can fall away from this world. And then the next day, everybody is just like, I don't remember anything that happened yesterday. And Ruki is like, yeah, I did that shit. Anyways, let's go to episode 4 and 5. It was a ballsy move,
letting that hollow pick up his sword for like the 1 second that he wasn't being all hollow monstrous. Like, that could have gone tits up real quick.
Okay, so this takes us up into episodes 4 and 5.
I want my board.
Anyways, so let's talk about Chad. Chad is one of my favorite characters in the entire show. And one of the reasons why is because he is just this brooding Hulk of a character that is just so randomly powerful that he sort of seems like, man, I've been reading so much One Piece, you guys. he keeps on reminding me, he keeps on reminding me as I was watching it of the big giant form of the name of the reindeer. Jesus, I just read about him.
Anyways,
Chopper.
I don't remember.
Chopper.
It's been so long.
It's Chopper.
Chopper. Get to the chopper.
Anyways, it always reminds me of like the big hulking form that Chopper takes at one point inside of One Piece. And he is just this big brooding idiot who's going to do really, really badass fight things later on inside of the show. And I cannot wait to get to that point, but we have so much to go. Anyways.
Yeah. Also, Chad, he's cool. He's very much the like very powerful, very strong, but very gentle giant kind of archetype. And his power level here is too much. He's too strong. And I remember when I first watched Bleach, I was like, what's up with this guy? Like, what is his secret? And his secret is nothing. He's just really strong.
Okay, so here's his secret, Blake. He has been doing 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, 100 crunches a day, every day.
This can't and be true. He has a full head of hair.
That is obviously a wig. It's Saitama.
Chad in a wig.
Oh my god. Can somebody please do Chad in a wig? Let's just Chad in different wigs. Oh my god, what if we did like a fan thing, if we did like a Wooly Willy, but except with Chad's face?
With Chad? Yeah, that would be great.
Anyways, so he's got a haunted bird.
We're going to be introduced to him hanging out with some characters that we never see again who are like, this bird is fucked up. Anybody who has the bird gets hurt. Do you want the bird? And he's like, yes.
Yep. That's exactly how it goes. He's just like, you know,
he specifically does it because he is fully impervious to damage for no logical reason. And so he's like, well, if the bird is hurting everyone that it's around, it can't hurt me. So I'll take the bird. I want my bird.
Yeah. He is connected to Ichigo by going to their family clinic. The reason why
Ichigo is connected to the shin bone.
Yes. He is touched by a hollow as well. Bad touch. And then there's going to be,
what am I saying?
Yes. Everybody stay on the door. There's not enough room. Chad, you got to get off.
You, Leo. It's okay.
So Chad and Rukia, they end up hanging out together at one point in the show. There is a hollow that's going to attack. Chad is going to do just incredible things out of nowhere. You know, like rip a telephone pole out of the ground.
Here's the deal. Earlier, when he got the parakeet, a steel beam fell from several stories up onto his head, and he walked away from it. Then,
look, I'm gonna fully support here that Chad is just Saitama in a wig. I'm throwing it out there.
He pulls a telephone pole out of the ground, and it's not like in a field after some rain and it's been there for a long time. Like, this telephone pole is concreted into the asphalt. Like, he just rips it out. Like, that's not, you can't do that without heavy machinery.
Yeah, it should be ridiculous, but
it is ridiculous,
everybody. So I like that you wrote down here that Rukia and Chad decide that they're going to do a fastball special. And anybody doesn't know what a fastball special it is, fastball special is when Colossus takes Wolverine and just fucking throws him at whatever enemy they're fighting, usually a Sentinel.
Yeah, they do that shit all the time, and they do exactly that in this chapter. So, like, Chad, when they get attacked by this hollow, and Chad punches it. He cannot see it, but he just starts swinging, and he punches it. And Rukia is like, this dude is just a human, which we've established is obviously not true, even though in-universe it literally is. Whatever. So he punches the hole, and she's like, that's weird. He shouldn't be able to do that, but in that case, let's have him punch the hollow some more. And so they do the thing where, like, he has the muscle and she has the eyes. So she's like, you have to punch him over here. And they do that for a little bit. And that's fun. And then the hollow grows wings like that monster in Pacific Rim and flies out of their reach. And instead of revealing that he has a sword arm, he pulls a telephone pole out of the asphalt and uses that as his sword arm to bat the hollow out of the air. And then I guess the hollow flies up further or something out of his range. And then Rukia is like, I have an idea. We'll do a fastball special. And then it like cuts to the hollow, and the hollow's like, whatever you're going to do, you're not going to be able to reach me with that telephone pole. And I'm like, number one, this person just pulled the telephone pole out of the asphalt. Like, he could easily do a toss at you. Like, you're not out of the blast zone here, but instead he's going to toss Rukia.
Yeah. Anyways, so there's going to be a little bit of back and forth here. That's going to lead to Ichigo just showing up.
I think they split up to search for Chad, and he went and he chose poorly, and so now he's figured out where they are.
Yeah, should have taken the grail that was made of wood. Anyways, Ichigo is gonna appear and he's gonna fight against the hollow. The hollow is just gonna reveal that he is just a complete monster.
Yeah, this
one's
cool.
Here was his deal. So he was a serial killer in his life, and he was like, you know what I want to do in my afterlife? I want to take somebody's dead soul and I want to stick it into an animal, and then I want to torment whoever has that animal for the rest of its life. And I looked up the lifespan of parakeets, and it's not that long. So I was like, you could have picked a parrot, man. Some parrots live for like 100 years.
Yeah, parrots, I think, live a little bit longer than humans.
Parrots are one of those animals, like, if you bought somebody a tortoise when they were, like, five, where it's just like, you're going to have to write that tortoise into your will if you treat that tortoise right its whole life.
Yeah.
Because that tortoise is going to fucking outlive you.
Yeah. The soul that he's put into this bird specifically is the soul of a young boy who killed him. And I get the impression that the boy killed him on accident, like, not literally this, but, like, he left out a Hot Wheels and the guy stepped on it on his way out of the apartment and fell down the stairs and died. Some shit like that. Like, the kid was not attempting to kill him. Huh?
He home aloned him.
Yeah, he home aloned him. That's absolutely true. So yeah. This dude was a serial killer, and his last kill was the kid's mom. And then the kid accidentally kills the guy. And the guy is so vindictive that he turns into a hollow so that he can take the boy's soul out of his body and put it into a bird. He doesn't want to kill the kid. He wants the kid to be alive but helpless and at the mercy of other people. And then the reason people think the parakeet is haunted is because the hollow follows the kid around and will try to kill the people that help him so that the kid feels that he is utterly alone. It is so fucked.
Yeah, he's a real big dick. Anyways.
That is a succinct summary.
Yep. Ichigo is going to murder him.
He's going to show up and he's fighting, and the hollow has, this is the first hollow we've seen with powers that aren't just being a big strong monster.
This
hollow can spit out little slug things, and then it has a tuning fork tongue, and the slug things are bombs, and when he does a specific frequency with his tongue, they explode, and that's cool. They're like little Cybermen. It's great. The Dragon Ball influence is strong in this one. And then Ichigo hears his story and is full of righteous anger that this guy is such a dick that his dickness carries into the afterlife and is having none of it.
Call it by its true form, his dickitude.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's his very dickly attitude, his dickitude.
I'm the dickest of all.
Anyways, Ichigo murders him. But let's talk real quick. We're almost done with these episodes, but I have to point out here that this is going to be our first real foray into the enemies and your main characters just having random powers that you do not expect. I love one of the things about Bleach more than probably anything else about Bleach, and that is you never know what the fuck the power is about to be of whatever character you're about to watch. There are characters who all of a sudden will reveal that one of their powers is to increase the weight of something by the amount of times that they strike it.
Yeah, that's one of the best powers.
Yeah,
the most creative.
Yeah, there are so many amazing powers inside of the show, and that is true for both the heroes, and more importantly, I think, really interesting powers for the villains. And as someone who is just knee deep right now in reading One Piece, I think that is one of the most interesting things about really well-written manga and really well-done anime as well, is that all of your characters shouldn't be just random, generic, I am super powerful. And that's one of the things that always turned me off about Dragon Ball Z. Dragon Ball has
things that aged poorly about Dragon Ball Z.
Well, hold on. Dragon Ball Super is still the same, dude. Like,
Not saying that Dragon Ball has changed itself. I'm saying that shonen series have changed with what they try to do. Where Dragon Ball, I think, came out in a time where the powers were simpler.
Hold on. Dragon Ball had really interesting different powers of all of these different fighting styles that they were using. And it introduced so many random things inside of the universe. So, like, Dragon Ball, Goku is really strong and he learns like one technique because he's kind of an idiot, and so he has difficulty picking up different techniques. Whereas Krillin builds his technique into a very different technique, and he is able to basically create a buzzsaw out of his ki energy. And then you have Tien, who has the power to do like solar flare. So there's just a lot of really interesting, not only fighting styles, but also different random power attacks inside the Dragon Ball.
You have that some with the Ginyu Force and stuff like it shows up.
Yeah,
later
and
too.
That's why I like the Ginyu Force so much. But when you start to get further in the series, it's just like everybody basically has the exact same power set, which is just getting bigger and bulkier and punching super fast and then shooting bolts of energy at each other. It's just.
Yeah.
It doesn't carry me in that way where Bleach has like a turn on everyone's powers. Everyone in the show, their powers are coming from within, and they are the manifestation of their soul working with their like manifestation of either their anger or their at peace or their I can't remember the name. We're going to eventually get to it, but I mean, Zanpakutos are super complex, and we're going to learn one of the reasons why this show has so much staying power. Well, not the show as much because it got canceled before it was done, but the manga has so much staying power because it makes you keep guessing what they're about to do in each one of their different fighting styles. And there is nothing more satisfying than hearing the word Bankai inside of Bleach, because you know something cool is coming, and also something is coming that you're like, I don't know what the fuck it's gonna be, but I'm super excited to see it.
Could be a giant baby slug.
Yeah, it could be. Anyways.
I think I agree pretty strongly with you on that. Like, I think I have a much more charitable opinion of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z than you do, or maybe more just Dragon Ball Z. But,
because I love Dragon Ball, but Dragon Ball Z is not my jam.
And you then probably Dragon like Ball Dragon GT Ball more than me because it's more your speed.
Mm-hmm.
But, I definitely grew up on Bleach and Naruto, and that they both have characters who use creative powers. In Naruto, characters tend to specialize in one or two things. In Bleach, they don't specialize so much as it's what they do. So like in Naruto, the magic system, you know, it's jutsu, and they're other than like traits that are inherited through your birth, you can teach other characters how to do different techniques depending on their various affinities. So, like, you know, Sasuke has this, like, cool lightning attack that he learned from Kakashi, who also has the same cool lightning attack. Whereas in Bleach, like, nobody's powers repeat, as far as I know. Obviously, there are similar powers, but each power is unique because it comes from that person rather than from, like, a pool of skills that you can learn. And I like both of them. I think Naruto does a good job of making sure the characters still feel unique, but I think Bleach really does that even further. But they also, one of the things I like about them is that they have a hard magic system, which is when the magic is very clearly defined and has very specific rules. So not only can they each do surprising and unique things that differ from one character to the next, but they will at some point before, during, or after the fight explain exactly what happened. And I like that because, one, I like rules, but two, I think when you have a hard magic system, you can think about like, okay, I know exactly what this character does, and now I can put them into different situations and think about how their specific ability would work in that situation versus like Lord of the Rings or maybe even Harry Potter have a pretty soft magic system, and it's like Harry's really good at Expelliarmus, but he can do all kinds of things. And like putting him in a specific situation where he needs ice powers isn't going to be a thing that's as interesting as a character in Bleach that might have ice powers using those ice powers to be a specific trump card to another power. And I like that about anime in general, but I think Bleach does that particularly well. So anyway, they have a funeral for a bird.
Yeah, that happens.
I could not handle it when I realized that, like, literally they have a funeral for the bird.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm pretty sure none of that's real. You're not real, man.
Yeah. So they perform the conso on the kid, which is great. Then Chad is going to be like, I will carry him forever into the afterlife. And when I walk on the beach, there will only be one set of footprints. And that's basically what Chad says at the very end of these episodes.
Weirdly, almost exactly correct.
Look, I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it is also there.
Yeah. Well, if you like this bullshit and you want some more of it, we have a Slack, or a Discord. So Discord it up. We have really good conversations on there lately. So come and join us.
Yep. And we will see you after these credits. What's going on next time?
Blake and Spencer Get Jumped is made by Forever Summer Productions.
With sound editing done by Rashad English. He's our level 10 sound wizard.
Level 10? That's a lot of new levels.
Well, he's been out in the waste grinding and killing low-level monsters to level up.
That checks out.
Our podcast is ad-free. And if you want to keep it that way, too, please consider supporting us on Patreon.
Follow us on Twitter at @BandSGetJumped.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BlakeandSpencerGetJumped.
Or talk to us on Reddit at reddit.com/r/getjumped.
If you like the show, please like, subscribe, and leave a review. Reviews help other listeners find our show.
New episodes come out every week on your favorite podcast platform.
And hey, thanks for listening.
Next month, on the patron-only episode of Blake and Spencer Get Jumped, we're covering Bleach episodes 6-9, and it's a solemn day in Ichigo's house as his family heads off to the cemetery and suddenly find themselves under the attack of a giant anglerfish-styled monstrosity.
But Khan is here now, so don't worry about it, because these episodes are going to be all about Khan. Here we go.